Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us this morning. It is Wednesday already. January is clipping away. It's already the 24th. Today is a great day, though. We could have a lot to give thanks for and to praise God for His goodness. And I read an interesting survey that said that everyone wants to know about heaven and everyone wants to go there, which is no surprise to me. There was a poll that suggested 80% of all Americans believe there is a place called heaven. And I find that statistic kind of encouraging because it tells me that even in a very skeptical age, there's something really deep inside a person's heart that really cries out, there's got to be something more. We're going to hopefully get a conversation with Dr. Mark Muska about that, about heaven. He's going to be hopefully joining us in studio here any minute. And in the meantime, this was encouraging for me because it says that drinking black coffee promotes weight loss and higher metabolism. Now, who doesn't want to have a little jump in their metabolism first thing in the morning? That says immediately after waking, drinking black coffee will boost metabolism. In a scientific journal, researchers wrote that coffee consumption increases metabolic rates for roughly 3 hours, which is nice. It allows people also to burn, on average, an extra 150 calories. The key is to add no sugar, cream, or milk substitutes. That's where you get your extra calories. And today is also National Compliment Day. Gee, Bill, you're doing a great job on air. Why, thank you. Thanks for saying that. Whether it's to validate someone's work or improve their mood, pass along a compliment today to somebody. All right, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, Dr. Mark Muska will be with us in studio. We're going to talk about heaven.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with the Faith in Life Minute. If you and your family are running from one activity to the next, listen to this encouragement from Dr. Linda Mental on how to slow down and get balance back into your life.
If you're just running from activity to activity and you just feel like you're the taxi cab mom or dad who's just constantly on the run and it's too much, then a lot of times I'll say to families, just cut something out. Just decide you're not going to do it. Learn to say no and bring back the family meal. If the schedule is so crazy that people can't even eat one meal together, you really need to rethink that, because the benefits of eating a meal together are absolutely astounding. If you did that, your kids would do better with nutrition, with academic performance. They have a lower risk for delinquent behavior, and that really seems to me like a really small price to pay for some really big results that can make things so much better in your family.
Find more healthy tips for your family from Dr. Linda Mental at myfaithradio.com.
Real, lasting encouragement for life's ups and downs.
Yeah, the programming, it's changed my life. I get to listen to that, stream it all day long riding in my semi, so it's pretty awesome.
I just appreciate all of the insight that I get and things that I can ponder as I drive. I drive all day, and so I get to ponder those and just think about my relationship with Christ.
Connecting faith to life every day. Thanks for listening to Faith Radio.
Welcome back to the show. It's 9 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us this morning. Bill Arnold here with you today. And always glad to have you tuning in and listening. Maybe you've already had that cup of coffee, so your metabolism is well underway, already been boosted. So it's the way we feel around here, because we do nothing here without a little morning devotion and then a little cup of the black Java. So we're awfully glad. We were hoping to get a chance to talk to Dr. Mark Muska this morning. There must have been a little mix-up, so Dr. Mark is maybe either on the way here or maybe he got stuck in a snowbank. And if that's the case, Mark, take care. Be well. We wanted to talk to Mark about the absolutely fascinating topic of heaven, because I think we all love heaven, and what we have read about heaven, we always kind of feel a little overwhelmed. We're excited at the idea of it. We're citizens of that kingdom. We're aliens on this earth. We're anxious, you know, to go be in the presence of God. But what does the Bible exactly teach us about that? And that's where Mark's expertise was going to come in, because he is so smart.
Right. All we have are questions. He was the one with the answers.
I know. I have all these questions lined up for him. But we always think about, will we go to heaven when we die? And maybe we should just talk about the righteousness of Christ. Maybe that's a really big word to you, because it is the righteousness of Christ. It is God's grace that comes into your life that is a gift that you receive by faith that gives you the right to enter God's presence. Because whether you grew up in a mainline denomination or you've always thought, well, maybe if my good deeds outweigh my bad, then, you know, maybe, and if I do enough of the right things and shovel my neighbor's walk and help the little old lady across the street, things will go well for me and I will be looked upon with favor. And that's really kind of a mentality that says I can earn my way there, or I can, through my good efforts, find favor in God's eyes. And God says, no, it's... in John 14, it says, do not let your hearts be troubled. This is Jesus talking. Trust in God. Trust also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I am going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I'm going. And Thomas kind of scratched his head and said, Lord, we don't know where you are going. So how can we know the way? And of course, Jesus says in John 14:6, he answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And I love that. I love the image of Jesus hanging on the cross, and he is having a conversation with one of the thieves, and the thief said, would you remember me? And Jesus said, today you'll be with me in paradise. That's so relational. It's so amazing to think that God, Jesus, on the cross was speaking in a very relational way, saying, you'll be with me. Because when you, the Bible talks about absence from the body is present with the Lord. And that was one of the big questions I had for Mark. I mean, that's a very thrilling thought. But I'm also curious as to what he understood to know to be biblical truth for what that looks like or feels like or what we know. Are we this disembodied spirits that are hovering around? And what is it like? So I, Marky Mark, you owe me. You're coming in here and you're answering these questions, because I got a whole bunch of them. But we love the idea. If you have some a profound biblical piece of insight Holy Spirit revealed to you in your study on heaven, we'd love to hear from you. 1-877-933-2484. Or you can email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. We'd love to include you in this morning's conversation. So we'll take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation on heaven. Be back in a minute. It is 16 minutes after the hour. Good morning. So glad you're joining me this morning with Rebecca and Paul. We are off to a great day today. We're giving God all kinds of praise and glory and thanking him for his goodness and mercy and his faithfulness to us. He never will leave us or forsake us, and that makes me very joyful. I was thinking of heaven as a place of permanent relief from all the ills of this world. And certainly there are many, and we talk about them on the show quite regularly. There's lots of ills in this life. And this is the short, brittle life. This is not the one that we were built for. I'm always interested when we talk about time, because people are generally confounded by the idea of time. You go to a high school reunion and you go, I can't believe it's been 30 years already. Because the whole idea of time just confounds us. And maybe that's because God created us to live with him in his timeless kingdom. So we're timeless beings prepared to live in his timeless kingdom. So maybe time on this earth will always confound us a little bit. It will always make us feel a little confused, which I think is pretty natural. I was looking at some of the verses in preparation for talking to Mark this morning, and it says in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 12, "For now we see in a mirror indirectly, but then we will see face to face. Now I know in part, but then I will know fully, just as I've been fully known." I'm always fascinated by the face-to-face concept, to think that you will have contact and see Jesus face-to-face. That's kind of awesome, intimidating. It's like, oh my, that sounds pretty neat. And then in, I think it's Luke, it says, when he, during the blessing, he departed and was taken into heaven. I mean, when he met with his 12 the night before he was crucified, Jesus kind of said where he had come from, who he was, and where he was going. And he had come from heaven. He told them who he was, and he also told them where he was going. So he knew exactly where he came from and where he was going. And I think we are all deeply interested in knowing our eternal destiny, even people who are skeptical, because there are many lost people that know in their heart that there's something else, because I will occasionally read an obituary where a person will have had no concept of faith, because they will openly say, wasn't spiritual, but now I know I'm on that great golf course in the sky. They still want to be in a good place. They want to believe that somewhere, somehow, their goodness in life has allowed them to go to a good place. And they start saying, if there's a good God in a good heaven and I'm a good person, that good God would take me to that good place. It's often the way people think. They do not know the truth. So when we encounter someone like that, Rebecca, what do you think is the one of the best starting places to further draw out their feelings or to introduce the concept of the righteousness of Christ into their life?
I think, obviously, they're open to conversations of eternity. And we're thinking about how this world is not all that there is. This life is not all that there is. And so I don't know about you, but I would rather not trust in my own goodness to try to get me anywhere in this life, because I know that I'm fallible and I know my best and I know my worst, and God knows even better than I do. I think scripture is often a good place to start if people seem like they're open to that conversation, because no one would know heaven better than Jesus. And so in order to get to know heaven, we have to get to know the God whose presence typifies heaven. I think that might be a bit of a cultural conflict, because there are a lot of people who may not know much about God or may not like much that they've heard about God, and yet they still want to believe in heaven. They still want this kind of reward. Well, that's a question, isn't it? What does it look like? So why don't we go to the Bible maybe a little bit more and describe some of what heaven looks like? And even, you know, the writers of scripture struggle with how to describe this eternal world. John in Revelation struggles, even you can feel it, the words that he's using, he knows are not quite adequate to describe the eternal. But in Revelation 21, he says, "I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order has passed away.' And he who was seated on the throne said, 'I am making everything new.'"
Ooh, good word. Love it. You know, and then Paul in Philippians says, "For to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. If I am to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me." So he knew that if he continued to live, he would have a job to do that God had ordained for him to do. Yet, what shall I choose? He says, I don't know. I'm torn between the two, because I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far. So I love that the fact that Paul knew the spiritual reality of the work God has enabled him to do. And also he knew that he wanted to serve Christ, but he also really wanted to depart and go be with him. So that is so encouraging. I just love it. I love it. So we're going to try to continue our conversation on heaven and its biblical reality. And we're going to try to learn what we can from Dr. Muska. We will get him as a return visitor to the show. In the meantime, we're going to take a little break and have Kent Kaiser join us. So we're looking forward to that as well. It's just about 23 minutes after the hour. Good morning. So glad you're with us. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 26 minutes after the hour. It is Wednesday already, middle of the week. Today is National Pay Someone a Compliment Day. So that's something you can easily do and give someone a little lift in their day and their spirits. Just got a call from a listener in Duluth, and she said, I lost my mom a few months ago, and when I find myself sad now, I think of her being there in heaven, and it truly helps remove my grief. Because that mourning process can be very difficult, so I want to say I will be praying for your loss and you as you are navigating your way life now without mom. So thanks for the call and for writing in. We've got Dr. Kent Kaiser already in studio. He came in a little bit early today because he's always wanting to be prompt, which I appreciate. And we're going to take, I think, a little break for news here coming up in just a few minutes. And then we're going to bring Kent on. We're excited that Kent is here, so let's go to break now, and it gives us more time with Kent.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with the Faith in Life Minute. If you and your family are running from one activity to the next, listen to this encouragement from Dr. Linda Mental on how to slow down and get balance back into your life.
If you're just running from activity to activity and you just feel like you're the taxi cab mom or dad who's just constantly on the run and it's too much, then a lot of times I'll say to families, just cut something out. Just decide you're not going to do it. Learn to say no and bring back the family meal. If the schedule is so crazy that people can't even eat one meal together, you really need to rethink that, because the benefits of eating a meal together are absolutely astounding. If you did that, your kids would do better with nutrition, with academic performance. They have a lower risk for delinquent behavior, and that really seems to me like a really small price to pay for some really big results that can make things so much better in your family.
Find more healthy tips for your family from Dr. Linda Mental at myfaithradio.com. Thanks to your generous ongoing support, God is moving mightily through the programs on Faith Radio. Rob called us and shared his experience.
You have no idea how you are touching hearts with your program and encouraging others, loving others, bringing healing and wisdom and needed understanding to the souls of many. So many of us are deeply thankful to the Lord for how he's using you.
Share your Faith Radio experience by calling the Faith Line at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-93-FAITH.
Good morning, 27 minutes until the top of the hour. We can have hope in our suffering because Jesus experienced the most extreme suffering ever and emerged victorious in the end. Here's Andy Crouch.
Jesus visited that part of life as well. So there's nothing, no level of shame, no level of immobility, you might say, that Jesus didn't experience, and he went all the way to death. And that is, I think, has to be where we begin, is just realizing Jesus has gone here. Jesus can be present even in this. And then I think the great challenge in all of the suffering that marks every human life is how not to flee it, but to go through it to a deeper and better kind of authority that comes on the other side of it. When you try to just reduce vulnerability or reduce suffering in your life, you almost always have to do that by exploiting other people or by insulating yourself from other people. But when you realize Christ went there, went all the way to death, and is now raised with all authority, could it be, by the way, he still has the wounds, he's still wounded, so he didn't remove the marks of his suffering. When we see him in the New Jerusalem, he's going to look, it says in Revelation, like a lamb that had been slaughtered. That's kind of an astonishing phrase from Revelation. And he holds on to all that vulnerability and yet rules and reigns with it. And I think actually that's for us too, that there's a way, if we don't hide from or run from the pain of our reality, that there's also a kind of spiritual authority that can come. And this is probably what Paul is getting at when he says, I'm going to boast in those things because, I mean, he even uses the word, at least in that English translation, calamities. Boast in my calamities because Christ's power is actually made known in those very things.
That is Andy Crouch, and there is hope in suffering. If you want to hear that full interview, the easiest way to do that is to myfaithradio.com. Type in Andy Crouch. Next up, we've got Dr. Ken Kaiser in studio. Be back in a minute.
America was founded as a nation rooted in higher law, not in man's law. This is Jim Garlow. The opening words of the Declaration of Independence say, "We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." The Founding Fathers understood that these inalienable rights are part of the higher law established by God. The United States was conceived with a thoroughly Christian foundation. More importantly, without the framework of principles rooted in Christianity, woven together, working together, we cannot survive as a free society. Each time we eliminate God from the basis of even one of these principles, we weaken and ultimately destroy it, because the principle is rooted in a belief in God. Stay well-versed on these issues at jimgarlow.com.
It is 24 minutes until the top of the hour. The bagpipes mean only one thing. Dr. Ken Kaiser is in studio. That is an original piece of bagpipe music, produced by his teacher, and one day we will get Kent in here with his bagpipes. It will definitely be on a day that I take off.
I have the bagpipes downstairs right
really?
Now in my office because I have bagpipe band practice tonight. But before we start, I must say, Maya, you look ravishing this morning, Ms. Maxwell.
Oh, that's so kind of you.
Yeah, because you're doing the national compliment
that's
day,
right.
aren't you? Yeah.
You got to get it out of the way
wow,
early.
Kent, that's a lovely shirt-tie combination you have on. Is that the tie you bought, or is that the one you got free?
You know what this tie I'm wearing today is? An Abercrombie & Fitch tie. Can you even believe the Abercrombie & Fitch used to? This is so old. This is from back in the day when Abercrombie & Fitch actually had nice clothing.
Yeah,
I mean, this is probably a 25-year-old tie.
Oh, funny.
The classics never go out of style.
I know.
Okay, Kent, did you ever think you'd see the day when Republicans beat Democrats on a government shutdown?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think that the Democrats really thought that they were going to get the upper hand because they have in the past. The last couple of government shutdowns have. But I think that they really miscalculated here because I think what happened here is you look at what they were using as their leverage, and it was this DACA or this Dreamers Act. And there is widespread support for taking care of these children of illegal immigrants. Now, mind you, these children are often well into their 20s, so they're not really they're not kids, and minors at least. But I think that what's happened is that support is a mile wide and an inch deep. And I think that there aren't a lot of people who are willing to suffer anything for it. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a government shutdown, you're creating suffering for people. Like, you're paying the military later, and you're closing national parks and things. And there are, if you gave people the choice to go and see the Statue of Liberty or save or pass this DACA, to help the Dreamers, they're going to choose to go to the Statue of Liberty and keep that open, and
right.
I think.
Yeah.
And so I think that this is why I think the Democrats really miscalculated the sentiment. And,
yeah.
And so, yeah, they got blamed for the shutdown. And what's most remarkable is that the mainstream media actually reported on this as if it were a Democratic shutdown and it was negative for the Democrats. I thought for sure that the media would all pile on Trump or the Republicans in Congress, but they didn't. That Trump and the Republicans didn't get the blame at all. And so the Democrats walked away with nothing for this. You know, they took us to the brink, took us over the brink, shut down the government, and really got nothing for it.
Mm-hmm. So, Ken, explain to me, Democrats can call Americans deplorables and illegal immigrants dreamers. Explain.
Yeah, it's a warped way of thinking. You know, they're supposed to be there to defend the Constitution and to work for the American people. And you do get this sense lately that a lot of the Democrats are working for illegal aliens rather than for the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And again, many people want to help and take care of these people or figure out something because some of them are good, hardworking members of our society. And so something should be done. But when you see, again, balancing it out, citizens versus non-citizens, it's kind of weird. You kind of understand the ulterior motive that the Democrats have. They believe that these people they're going to help are going to be Democratic voters, and that motive is pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, I think, see through what the Democrats are doing. Like they have had some election losses when you're looking at just who's already an American.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's get some more people in here. We can make them Americans, and we'll take the credit for making them Americans. And so they'll have some affinity for our party. And so that's what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very political kind of a move. And that's also part of the issue with the chain migration that we've been talking about. And that is where one person comes here as an immigrant, and then they get to bring relatives, even distant relatives, cousins and things. And the Democrats are all for that, or many of them are for that. And, again, you can kind of see through that motive. It's trying to get more of their kind of voters into the country. And that's, by the way, with this DACA bill, that's part of the debate right now. Do we just take care of those young people who were brought here through no fault of their own? They're
mm-hmm.
here in the United States. Again, many of them are in school or they're in jobs and they're working hard. Some of them aren't. Some of them are, of course, like the normal population. A lot of them are criminals and stuff. But most of them are probably trying to be good, hardworking people, and they're just not citizens yet. Now, do we just allow them in? Do we just give them citizenship? Or do we give their parents citizenship? Now, the parents, remember, are the ones who broke the law, came
right.
here illegally.
Right.
And that's kind of where the debate is right now. I think if it were just a bill about those young people who were brought here through no fault of their own, we could probably get a bill passed in no time at all. But the Democrats are pushing for also including the parents. And that's chain migration.
Mm-hmm.
When you start saying, okay, we're going to give citizenship to these people, but they can also bring in their relative and make them a citizen too. That's where the argument is right
mm-hmm.
now.
Ken, only a third of Americans now trust the government, which is a surprisingly big number.
I personally, I'm like, good. You know, this trust in government has gone down. Wow. I mean, like,
yeah, big
I'm
surprise
like, thankfully.
There. And only a third say they trust the government to do what is right. That's a decline of 14 percentage points from last year.
Well, and I think that's fine. Here's the thing. You know, of course, as Christians, we put trust in God and not in government. But liberals, I think, often put trust in government. I think many of them don't have God in their lives. And so for a lot of them, that's sort of the substitute is this institution. And it's an institution of men, an institution of people. We shouldn't be putting our trust in an institution of people at all. And unfortunately, I think that that's what many on the liberal side have done. And so if they're feeling less confident about their government, fine. Maybe they'll go off and find something else to have trust in, and maybe it'll be the church.
Mm-hmm. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Probably won't be. But, I mean, there's maybe an opportunity here for helping people to see the way.
Mm-hmm. But if they don't trust the government to do the right thing, why are we so consumed talking about it all the time?
Well, it's how they're defining the word right thing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if you look at it from the perspective of a Christian conservative, right now the government's doing all kinds of the right thing. You know, we might not like some of the things that President Trump has said, but right now we've got the most pro-life administration that we've probably ever had in the country's history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got, in for example, just to give a little bit of a little tiny bit of an example here for people to hold on
little
to,
tiny
you
bit?
Know, yeah,
like it,
it's the Department of Health and Human Services that, you know, most of the people at the upper echelons of that department now are Christian conservatives.
Wow.
And you might wonder, well, what does that even matter? Because it's a bureaucracy. It's a part of government. Well, you know, there are these rules that are promulgated from these agencies, and one of them has to do with affects doctors and nurses. Okay. And one of those, there is these rules on the book that, you know, you shouldn't have to do something that's against your religious conscience. Well, that's always been kind of nebulous. And if a doctor opposed something, maybe even had to sue to have his rights, you know, or her rights. And now with this administration, they're putting forth these rules that say, look, if you're a doctor and you don't want to have to administer an abortion, you do not have to.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a doctor and you are opposed to a transgender surgery, you do not have to be part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, so you're seeing religious freedom actually being promoted through the official channels of government, which is a good thing. Now, it's, of course, on the liberal side, they're going to say, oh, we're blurring the lines, the separation of church and state. Well, no, it's not as though we're setting up state religion. We're just putting some kind of morality in there that makes common sense.
Mm-hmm.
That a doctor shouldn't have to perform an abortion if she or he doesn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, that's just a little example of how this administration with Christians in charge is making a real difference in people's lives.
Yeah. Kent, a minute before we go to break, if we think of democracy as understanding what the facts and the information are, and then we can use that as a basis for lawmaking, negotiation, compromise, how thorough is that right now with mainstream media and our mistrust for what we learn and see on TV every night?
Well, I actually think it's a good thing that there's some mistrust in what we're seeing on television because, I mean, you know, there is a bias in the media, and it seems, while we've seen it like crazy since Trump was elected, it's as though the media seem to have, they feel some obligation actually to be not just showing what's happening in the administration, but actually to be opposed to what's going on. And so it's good if people, I think, are skeptical of what they're seeing on television. I think that's always been the case. I think you shouldn't just take what's said on television at face value. Because there's two things. Things are biased on television. But the other thing is they don't tell you the whole story. There's oftentimes, like, how many people have heard that story that I just told about, you know, now we're having rules coming from the government that say, no, doctors doesn't have to give abortions if they do abortions if they don't want to. Mm, you know, you aren't going to hear that in the mainstream media. You really have to dig for that kind of information to know exactly what's happening in our government. And so I think people should be skeptical, first of all, of what they're hearing in content, but then what they're not hearing, because that's part of it, too, the agenda.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking to Dr. Kent Kaiser, and he's in studio with a necktie on, so I guess I have to listen more carefully today. It's 13 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be back with more in just a minute. It's 11 minutes till the top of the hour. I have Dr. Kent Kaiser in studio. And Kent, you have a smartphone, don't you?
I do.
All right, let me ask you this. Does your provider, whether it's Apple or an Android or whatever, could they come up with your text messages over the last 5 months? Would they have access to them?
Well, that's my understanding. You know, like students are talking about how they're all worried that they have access to their pictures. Well, yeah, they do.
Yeah.
I know another
yes,
professor.
Do.
I know another professor, not here, but I know another professor elsewhere who, for the first day of class, actually gets the class list and then he looks up those people's information on social media. And
okay.
Then his first presentation of the semester is, here's what is out there about you.
Oh.
And it'll be the text messages and the Twitter feed and the pictures that they posted and things like this. And the students are just, you know, shocked. at what anybody can find about them. But yeah, of course, you could, you know, the companies keep all that data. They're required to keep all that data, and they actually hand it over to the government. So the government actually, that's been part of the, you know, since surveillance since 9/11, part of the debate is like, should the government be able to have all your text messages? Well, yeah, and they do.
Okay, so riddle me this, Batman. If the FBI has been missing 5 months of text messages, how is that possible? Where did they go?
Yeah, it's unfathomable that they couldn't come up with those, and it's worse than Watergate in terms of the volume of material that's gone missing here.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I believe, like, here's the thing: is like the providers, you know, your whether it's AT&T or Sprint or whoever, your provider, they don't necessarily agree with this having to turn over all of your stuff to the government. Mm-hmm. They're just forced to.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect if they were forced to come up with all these emails, they could probably, or these text messages, they could probably do it pretty quickly.
I would think so. You're the FBI. Yeah. Come on, you can't get a hold of 5 months of text messages.
That's right.
Well, it certainly helped the investigation and get some answers. We've got the Super Bowl coming up in a week or so, and there's already an NFL rejection of a Super Bowl ad from a veterans group urging people to stand for the national anthem. And they're saying, what, that's too controversial, it's too political, what's the deal with that?
Yeah, this is a little weird. Now, the Super Bowl has always had has had a number of standards, actually, for the advertisements that appear during the game. And they've never allowed political messages. You might recall where there was a message that starred Tim Tebow and mm-hmm. his mom, and it was a pro-life message, and they rejected that one. In this case, this one seems a little far-fetched for a denial, and it is a veterans group that wants to run an ad with the flag and says, please stand up. And the NFL has decided that that's too political. I think they've gone off the deep end on this particular call, but it is a longstanding rule that they don't allow political messages. It's just that the interpretation of this one as being political seems a little far-fetched,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah. So scientists are buried in snow at Davos while they're lecturing on the global warming.
Yeah, I know. It's funny.
Well, I don't know. Is it funny? I mean, it's
they'll say it's snowing more because of global warming, probably.
That's their default. Isn't that what you just say? If it's too hot, it's global warming.
Yeah, well, and they
cold,
don't even call. Well, and the thing is that they, you know, notice how they changed to climate change. You know, of course the climate's changing; it always has. You know, the big debate is whether it's caused by people and whether it could even be changed. And of course, the cost of having any kind of an impact on it probably outweighs the benefit. The tiny little chip you could make in the increase in the temperature or whatever, but this has become like almost like a religion for many people, the environment. And in fact, I know of one scholar who refers to this as deep ecology. It's a religion for people, and this is just a little piece of it.
Yeah.
The whole climate change and global warming and their activism on this is just a little piece of that. It becomes their religion in place of not having a real religion.
Mm-hmm. So we're looking at some of the conservatives when they seem to be pretty tolerant of dissenting views, almost more so than people who sort of fancy themselves as liberal and open-minded. I mean, every day I read the paper where I see somebody else expressed some like for President Trump, and their career is now 100% over.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. There was this article, it was a national article actually, that quoted especially rural Democrats about how intolerant their own party has become. And one of those who was quoted was actually from Minnesota, mm. a woman who's in our state legislature, who talked about how it's okay. She said in a sarcastic way, it's okay to be intolerant if you're liberal, is basically what she said. And she agrees that her own party, the Democratic Party, has become intolerant of opposing views, that they have too many litmus tests, that if you're not lockstep with the most liberal part of the party, then you're not welcome anymore. And
that's
this is
crazy.
Particularly a problem for rural Democrats. And there are still some states where there are some rural Democrats. It's not common anymore, I'll tell you, but in here in Minnesota, in rural upper Michigan, in some other places, Wisconsin, there are some places where there are still some rural Democrats in office, and oftentimes their views aren't lockstep with their party. Sometimes they'll be pro-gun. Sometimes they will be pro-life. That's pretty rare anymore. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to have seen, even at the state legislative level where pro-life Democrats, they're scarce as hen's teeth now. I mean, there used to be quite a few of them, but they've been kind of rooted out of their party or replaced by a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And because their party wasn't very supportive. And it's really kind of unfortunate. But even if you look at, like, Bernie Sanders, look at him. He's been pro-gun. I mean, he's actually been pro-gun, but he's from a very rural kind of a state. And
yeah.
And so you think of how liberal he is. But he's the last of a dying breed, in a sense, of Democrats who can be pro-gun. I mean, that's one of those issues. First, it was pro-life. Now it's pro-gun. Those are the people that they're rooting out of the Democratic Party. And this is creating a big problem, because that party has become one of just sort of – the East Coast, as we saw in the last presidential election, they've amassed, I like to say they've amassed all of their population on the coast in a few states. And so they can't win, you know, they couldn't win electorally for the presidency. But the reality is that they haven't actually amassed all of their population. Well, maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
But what they've done is they've rooted out any Democrats who had even a conservative view on mm-hmm. Maybe one issue.
Ken, just 20 seconds left. If you want to be liberal or you get liberated, do you do that because you want to be told what to think and how to vote?
Well, it seems that way. I mean, unfortunately, it just does seem as though what we see in interviews and things is that people are just... And I get it. People want to take shortcuts. They don't want to think about an issue. You know, that's a whole communication theory. People want to take a shortcut to come up with a decision. They see that somebody's a Democrat. They stand for a particular issue, and that's where this other person should stand too.
Yeah. So, Kent, yeah. Thanks so much for coming in. Always great to see you. Have a great day.
Thanks for having me on.
Yep, it's 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be back in just a minute.
Off the side of the road.
Thanks very much to Dr. Kent Kaiser for coming into the studio. We've got a great second hour just ahead. Bill English will be with us. And then David Wheaton, we're going to talk about evolution, creation. Be back with hour two in just a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.